You're listening to Dirk Pullman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to the Dirk Pullman Show from Berlin, Germany. My guest is Pille Neroth, a fellow TNT host, and we share many, really many stories and in investigations into the Cold War. And strangely enough, I just noticed a few days ago that we are both writing books that have a deep connection to Kennedy, in Pelle's case, but he can talk about that in a few seconds. I think it's directly Kennedy. In my case, it's if anybody tries to end the Cold War, then he gets into danger. That is in Germany with the case of the Alfred Herrhausen, a banker like there is no banker like that in the world anymore. With the consciousness, he's not about shareholder value, but rather making a difference in society. And he was killed by the Red Army faction, but they were just the useful idiots. This is what I wrote about. And during that time, I started to investigate John F. Kennedy. That's 60 years ago. My lawyer is a specialist in that, and we did a podcast together in Germany, which is quite popular. And I have to say, I was shocked when I went deep into the Kennedy case that there still are people who say that he was shot by Lee Harvey Oswald, and that's it. It's incredible. So, Pelle, what is your take? You're writing the book. What is your focus on it?
Well, I'm just trying to tell a simple story of who killed. I mean, I think that the truth is discoverable. I mean, it's with these assassinations, you don't need to go down a rabbit hole. I mean, it's five or six people in a physical place and time, and often using quite simple weaponry, guns and so on. I mean, and I want to tell the story to the sort of story you could tell in the pub to friends. Basically, I have this, my ideal reader is somebody who listens to TNT and then goes to sort of Thanksgiving meal and in the US or some, I don't know, midsummer thing in Sweden or something. And then on the one hand meets a know-it-all uncle, and then on the other hand, a know-it-all niece. She's 25 years old, and she thinks she's been fed with ideas of conspiracy theory. And as I said, I mean, conspiracy theory is just a status language. It's like far right. It's like capitalist pig dogs in Maoist China. It's a word, it's a phrase to kill all kinds of arguments. And it's saying, I'm cleverer than you are, and you're a loser, and I'm not going to sleep with you. You know, that's what it comes down to. You're a conspiracy theorist. So I want to give people basically the sort of things they could write on a beer mat or something, or in a cheat crib sheet, and go to a party or to Thanksgiving and say, no, it's not obvious. Bang, 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 bang. Oswald didn't do it. And then if they got time, who did do it? And my obvious thing is that you just need to look at the Zapruder film. That's the 15-second refutation, because the problem is people don't have time to read books and let alone YouTube videos, and especially if they're not all that interested. So I actually, a couple of years ago, I did a YouTube video that was like really short, a few minutes long. And I just talked about the Zapruder film, which is this haberdasher or something. It was, standing on the steps of this pergola structure as the car came past, and he captured this film. And it was kind of locked in for 10 years by Time Life magazine. And it turns out Life magazine was owned by or run by a guy who was a CIA asset. What was his name now? CD something. And he
Luce,
was...
Henry Luce.
No, it wasn't. You know, Luce was an asset as well. You know, he was... but there was somebody else. CD Jackson, I think he was. He was like a known asset. And they kept the Zapruder film away from the general public. And then it was shown in 1975. And that's what sparked the House Committee on Assassinations, which actually concluded it was a conspiracy. So we've got the official, that's what the congressmen said in 1978.
May I interrupt here? Because I think that's already the first very strange part that people don't know. There is this Zapruder film. Zapruder film means there's a guy standing there, and he—that's the best. There are several photos and film, but this is the one where you see that John F. Kennedy's head exploded, really in a cloud of blood from the shot from the front. His head goes backwards and to the left. And this is not cannot comply with the official theory that he was shot two times, at least two times, from the back, from three shots fired by Lee Harvey Oswald. One, the first one went astray, completely astray, hit asphalt. And then the other ones are supposed to come from the back. But the point with the Zapruder film, I've gave several lectures here in Germany and I ask people, and it's hardly ever more than 10% of the people that came to my lectures, which were the deep state and the JFK murder. They didn't know the film, but the interesting part is the film was shot and then Zapruder, three copies were made that went to the FBI, to the Secret Service, and one to Life. That was, as you said, Henry Luce with his wife, Claire Booth Luce, a big communist eater in the Cold War. And then there's already the first thing. The film is blown up from 8mm to 35mm, and nobody has seen it in the United States until 1975. It is kept by Luce from Life magazine, and he prints it in Life magazine for black and white prints in the wrong order. The order gives you the impression that the head moved moved forward, and that is because the film hadn't been shown. And then you have to know that the both Luces and Alan Dulles and Anne Bancroft, his mistress, had a kind of a foursome. They were in reality in bed together. That is CIA with the owner of Life having this film. And we wouldn't know the film hadn't it been shown in 1975 by Diego Rivera on the Good Night America show, where the guy who blew it up from 8mm in a Kodak lab to 35mm made a bootleg copy, an illegal copy, presented that to a citizens committee in the United States. And they all said something is deeply, deeply wrong here. And then it was aired on TV because there is the journalist Diego Rivera who had he was bold enough to do it, and that is the first thing. This essential thing had been hidden away from the public, the essential evidence, and we wouldn't know hadn't it been for this show. And the question is, what would happen today if somebody Julian Assange and the piece where the helicopter crew guns down several journalists and civilians. What happened to the guy who transported that film and published it? So we are in a deep and a very. This is already one of the cases, but we can go on. I mean, there's this is why I say it's so shocking. Yeah.
Well, sorry. When they say they were literally in bed, do you say they were in bed physically?
Physically, they were a foursome. They changed partners. It was Henry Luce, Claire Booth Luce, it's Anne Bancroft and Alan Dulles. And that went cross over all the time. Yeah.
Incredible. I didn't know that. And that bootleg film, because some of these explanations, I think one of the reasons why normal people lose interest is that sometimes I think that some of the Kennedy writers, and that goes for all investigative journalism, they veer off into their favorite topic and they need an editor, or they need to say, if you want to find out more of this very, very specific thing, go online, and they can clickable and then keep a simple narrative flow. But anyway, this thing about because they talk about multiple copies of the Zapruder film, and one of them has sliced into it to make the CIA correct. Do you know anything about that?
No. No, it has been blown up from the original film. You can see even the holes in the 8mm. Yeah. So to get the most information, but it's only the point that is really important is the movement of the head, that you see the shot.
And of course,
then from there it goes to the point that in the autopsy, the person who made the autopsy said the photos are falsified from the autopsy. Mm. And the lady said, this can never be the original photos. They tampered with the photos because the bullet entered the head somewhere here. Yeah. And part of the head is blown off. That's also what you see in the film, because Jackie is crawling on the back of the car.
That's right.
And what
That's
she's right. doing there is not that she's in shock or horror. She tries to get that piece of skull of her husband, which is lying on the backside. to keep it. He lost. I mean, that is that's another thing. So the autopsy, and then the autopsy is not done by the people that they got to do it. The medical doctors have never, the leading one had never done an autopsy before, but the head who run the autopsy was Curtis LeMay, the U.S. the strategic air strategic air command commander, who was his adversary in the Cuban Missile Crisis, who wanted to start a nuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and ran loggerheads with John F. Kennedy, and he is made the chief for what? Why? It was a public the autopsy was done in public and they were looking at it, and the head of the autopsy was run in command by Curtis LeMay. And if you listen to the people who were involved in the autopsy, it gets even stranger. So from the very beginning, there's a structure around even the dead body of Kennedy, which is completely if you read it, you cannot understand what's going on there. It's even to the point where, for example, the bullet, the magic bullet, as it's known, which allegedly has went into Kennedy from the back, then went crosswise outside again, then into Connelly, again the back into his wrist, and from the wrist into his leg, and he's allegedly lying on a stretcher. Connelly is not dead, he's wounded in the hospital next to Kennedy, and then allegedly this magic bullet, which has shattered his wrist, and there is lead on his wrist, but the bullet looks pristine, rolled from Connelly outside from his leg onto his the stretcher that he lived, and then allegedly rolled over to Kennedy. So that is, you read that, you say, whoever was willing to take that. And that is the point with a Warren Committee, that several people in the Warren Committee said, I'm not going ahead with this investigation. That is another part, how that was run. Earl Warren is not an evil man. He was a good man, but it is. So it's, but I get into the Warren Commission because that was run by Alan Dulles, by Earl Warren, and a member is Alan Dulles. And Alan Dulles had been fired by Kennedy personally after the Bay of Pigs disaster. And he is one of the masterminds who, it's not a far-stretched guess that Alan Dulles, who was fired, but what as at the so-called farm running the operation against Kennedy, he was back in office, so to speak, back in command. So why does this guy, who is the mastermind of all the crimes that he was fired for, running the show in the Warren Commission? That is another thing that please explain to me, like Curtis LeMay autopsy.
Yeah, I mean, I think people want names, and my names are James Jesus Angleton, who's the head of counterintelligence. It was Definitely. Alan Dulles. It was Richard Helms, who's the deputy director of the CIA. And it was the gunman, the organizer was Howard Hunt. Yeah. And you can see his photo in Dealey Plaza wearing a hat and, looking like the spy, walking towards the grassy knoll minutes or seconds after the actual shooting. And there's a big news photo and you have to blow it up and you have to look at his face and nose. It's always the nose and mouth that you can tell, and that doesn't change, you know. And those proportions, and then look at any other mugshot of Howard Hunt, and Howard Hunt turns up in the Watergate scandal. We can talk about that later. So it's quite incredible that the two biggest post-war scandals involve the same guy. So he was like the bench warmer, and he said so almost on his deathbed, 2004. He died in 2007 when he was crippled, and he was talking to his estranged son, who was a drug addict. And he later wrote a book about it. And there's an article in Rolling Stone. Just Google Rolling Stone. Howard Hunt, and the article will come up, and that will tell you all you need to know. And then there was this guy called Sarti, who was a Corsican gunman, William, and he was the grassy knoll guy. And then there was William Harvey, who was a former Rome chief. And then there was, I think, Frank Fiorini, who was also known as Frank Sturgis, and he also turned up at Watergate. And then there may be a couple of others. And there were these, because people said, well, who are your candidates? Lee Harvey Oswald was in on it. He knew about it. He was a wannabe spy, wannabe CIA. And he was standing on the ground floor, first floor in American parlance, by the steps, with six or seven other people from the book depository, standing in the shadows. And there's a news photograph of that, which really looks like Lee Harvey Oswald. So he wasn't on the sixth floor, and he wasn't holding a gun, although there was another kill team there, probably. And there were at least two kill teams, maybe three. One kill team, the grassy knoll in front of Kennedy. Those are the kill shots. One in the sixth floor of the book depository, probably missed. And I think it was Jerome Corsi, who I interviewed 2 weeks ago, thinks there's a third and fourth team, because there was a bullet in the back that could have come from the Daltex building. And it makes sense that they wanted to have far more bullets than we think, not the three bullets that the Warren Commission
more than that.
Insisted
Let's
on.
Get into the ads, and we get back to that, because I'm a fan of evidence. And there's interesting evidence why Lee Harvey Oswald is the patsy. That's what he said. Yeah. He said, "I'm just a patsy," before he was shot. So let's get into that after the ads.
TNT's James Freeman.
Proposals to construct a global censorship and information control operation led by the WHO have also been dropped. Thank God for that. What the hell has the WHO got to do with censoring online information? Provisions proposed to expand the scope of the IHR to include all risks with potential to impact public health, including climate change and food supply. Well, they have also been deleted. The scope now remains essentially unchanged, which is all about the spread of disease.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The human mind is like a computer. No matter how efficient it may be, its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
Yes, and back on the Dirk Pullman Show with Pelle Nirut, and we are discussing... I noticed that we will run out of time shortly if we go on like this, but I wanted to to mention another thing, which I think is interesting. For people who are not that privy or don't know too much about the Kennedy murder, it's allegedly Lee Harvey Oswald that shot him from a building that he worked in, the Texas School Book Depository, from the sixth floor. And it is when Kennedy drove by, the owner, main person, the chief of the school book depository, and the policeman heard a shot, and they saw doves coming up from the building. So they ran upstairs because they thought something was connected to that, which there had been shots from this direction for sure. The point is that they went up, and there's testimony that they saw Lee Harvey Oswald in the second floor eating his sandwich in a room with a Coke bottle in his hand where you could get your lunch, basically. Not just sit and eat there. That the point was that he was there when they saw him running up, and he had been seen before by two ladies also from the building at the same position. But he said in his testimony that he was downstairs. And that is the point when the president drives by, it's not very credible that somebody stays in the building. So there's this photo, which is called The Praying Man, which looks pretty much like Lee Harvey Oswald. He even has a Coke bottle in his hand. And he's he was out there.
Yeah.
But even more interesting is if you have these two, the two witnesses, and the time in between is something like 90 seconds, and that has been tried. He could have run after he was seen the first time, run four stairs upwards, to the sixth floor. But do you do that as a sharpshooter, that you're out of breath? Mm. And that this is right. not the way to handle an assassination for a person, right. and run downstairs. But even more than that, Kennedy was 5 minutes late on the his parade. Mm. So this is the crucial argument for that. So if Lee Harvey Oswald was supposed to shoot Kennedy, he should have been in position 5 minutes before the shooting, at least, probably more than 10, because you're up there and you're trying, you try to get cool and breathe slowly and get a good hand for the shooting. The other thing is that there was no residue from the gunpowder on his cheek, and there were no fingerprints of him on the gun, which is also very weird. Yeah, so this already points to something. Points to something else. So the shooting itself, and then there's they have tried how long it takes. It's an Italian carbine, and it takes about at least 2.1 seconds to reload for the next rifle. But there are two shots with a time distance of 1.8 seconds. So this is all evidence which points that this could not be true. But I think more interesting is that Lee Harvey Oswald, who had been, you know, was in the American military. And while he was in the military, his colleagues called him Oswaldowicz because he was an avid reader of Marx. And was talking about that, and then he went from to the USSR via Helsinki, with an amount of money that he should not have in his possession. Went to the American embassy, declared there that he would spill secrets because he was working as a U-2 specialist in Japan. In his job as a Marine, he went to the Americans and said, "I will tell the Soviets the secrets. I will go to the Soviet Union." Then he went to the Soviet Union. They didn't want to accept him as first, but he had something like a staged suicide attempt. Then he was taken in. He lived there for between 1 and 2 years in Minsk, came back with his wife unhindered into the United States. He even got money from the United States. So he was probably already on a double agent course, sent into the United States by the CIA, brought back. His file was handled personally by Alan Dulles. Mm. Anybody who wanted to see his file had to report to Alan Dulles. And then he was there. And this is why Charles de Gaulle called him the communist who was no communist, but was one. So Lee Harvey Oswald was connected by the CIA with a KGB background and a Cuban background. And I think, important to understand, this is how it was handled in the Warren Commission. The people in the Warren Commission, for example, there was a senator from the South. He wanted to get out, Russell. He wanted to get out of the Warren Commission because he said, "I'm not going with this bullshit that that's my words now." It was a little less than that. Yeah. So with the bullshit that you tell you there. But how they managed to have the Warren Commission on course, and that was Alan Dulles, was that they said there's this danger because Lee Harvey Oswald is an asset of the Soviets and the Cubans. And if you don't make sure that he is the one and only person and that there's no connection to the Soviet Union and Cuba, we could have World War III. Do you want us to have World War III? And that is the way they made sure that the commission, with Gerald Ford, also a member of that, on it, did everything. They hushed up the autopsy. They hushed up the investigation, not because they were so evil. Warren was not an evil man, but because the evil James Jesus Angleton's created this situation together with LBJ. That is the name missing in your line of people that we have to talk about. Yeah. But so this is it's an elaborate scheme that I would say is exactly what James Jesus Angleton was known for. He was in fact a guy from the academics for literature. He came up with these plots, and he was deeply paranoid because in his younger years he worked together with Kim Philby, a member of the Cambridge Five. The whole whole MI6 Soviet desk was handled by people who in reality worked for KGB. And this created kind of a professional paranoia in him. And he, after that, James Jesus Angleton was always looking for that evil mole from evil Soviet Union everywhere he went. That was became really an obsession. He went to psychiatric care. Because he was clinically paranoid, but that had a good reason. But I think this is a point where you wanted
Reminded me that my book so far doesn't contain any mention of Philby, but maybe it should, because Kim Philby went to my old school in London, Westminster. And I'm realizing now when I talk to a lot of Americans, you realize that everyone wants to, like a novelist uses every scrap of their past. And I've never talked about Westminster really, but it was one of those very famous public schools, you know, like Eton, and right in the heart, in the shadow of Westminster Abbey, and right in the shadow of the British Parliament, and very, very establishment, but much more radical and left wing than, for instance, Eton. So it threw up these people who were objected to. They felt that they were part of the establishment, but they had the F off attitude that we can do what we want, a sense of impunity. And Philby was surrounded by old Etonians and other old Westminsters. So he was a gentleman. And even when MI5 was the foot soldiers, the players, and MI6 was the public school boys, the gentlemen. So the MI5 were the policemen, and they found out that Philby was a spy early on, but the MI6 men protected their own. So it was officers that, they were the working class MI5, and MI6 was the upper class. And the MI5 says, look, all the evidence shows that Philby's a spy for the Soviets, but he was able to get away with it. And then he fled to Moscow in 1964, I think, when a friend, Nicholas Elliott, who was an old Etonian, went down to see him and try him get him to confess or just to shut up and disappear, because it was very embarrassing for MI6. And he just fled to Moscow and spilled the beans. But the point is, once he was in Moscow, he had his subscription to the Times and ate Coleman's mustard and followed the cricket scores and wrote to his friends. Yeah. But he was like, Angleton thought that Philby was playing games with him all the time. So he imagined that there was this gigantic chess game going on between him and the Philby and the KGB, so that whenever they sent over a defector, it was like a false defector. And there was Angleton thought there were like two KGBs. There's the official KGB, which you could deal with. And then there's a private KGB, which was planning to take over the entire world. And so there were two Soviet unions. There's an inner Soviet Union that was wanted to destroy America. And then there's an outer Soviet Union that you could deal with, apparently. And I think that it's called the monster plot, in a way. Mm. And that has suffused, it's still living on even today, like 60 or 70 years on, this idea that you can never talk to the Russians, because even when they want peace, they actually want to destroy you. And like the end of the Soviet Union was
very, that's very true what you say, Pelle. That is point. If you look at Kennedy, the Kennedy from 1961 is not the Kennedy from 62 and from 63. And Alan Dulles, who managed really the American president Eisenhower, Eisenhower was not a bad man. Yeah, he was. But the two Dulles brothers, his John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State, and Alan Dulles as head of CIA, were running the show. So if you talk about the deep state, this is where you should start to look. And that included the military, who thought that Kennedy, who was pro civil rights, he was a champion of that. This is how he was elected, and also his brother would have been elected. He was shot in the moment that he understood that he won the California for presidency election. But I even have a BND file where Otto Scorzeni reports from the United States that American high-ranking American Air Force officer consider him a catastrophe that has to be handled, because he's running on, they call it the Negro money and the Negro vote, and also from internationally proposed by all these former African states who had been colonies. But the point there is that Kennedy understood. He was brought into the situation by Alan Dulles with the Bay of Pigs disaster. That was intentionally to have him into a situation where they thought he couldn't go back from this disaster that they created and say, we simply lost, we blew it, we screwed it up. And they thought, they brought him in a situation that finally he had to start the war against Cuba, which would be the start of the war against the Soviet Union, which the military wanted. Curtis LeMay, who I mentioned, even said later on that they should have had the war at that time because they could have won it easily earlier. That was an idea that was deep in the American military. And Kennedy, being 40 years old, and they thought they could manage him. Dulles thought he could manage him like he managed Eisenhower. He always had these sneaky operations of killing, getting Arbenz in Guatemala out of government, having Mossadegh in Iran to getting him out of government. Killing Lumumba, getting him away from the government. And that always worked. And he told Eisenhower, for example, von Arbenz, who was kind of the Guatemaltecan Kennedy, you could say, when he finally managed to get him off, that was a gentleman, Arbenz. But when he got him off, then he told Eisenhower, we managed this situation without much bloodshed. The dire, the doom of communism that was in Guatemala, which meant that United Fruit Company was running the company, and astonishingly, both Dulles brothers were involved in the United Fruit Company, were their lawyers and were in the board of directors of the United Fruit Company. I don't know if it's called board of directors, but they were money-wise invested in it and high up in the ranking. So that was, and then they thought they could manage Kennedy the same way. They could make sure that he would, and then he fired Dulles. Their reaction was that he allegedly, that is not completely known if it's true or not, he said he will, he fired Dulles personally and said he will splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. That is a quote, but we don't know for sure if it's true, but that was the attitude. And so that was when they noticed that Kennedy was not from the same wood as Eisenhower had been. They couldn't control him. And then after the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was handled by his brother, Robert Kennedy, really, and the ambassador of the Soviet Union, Kennedy understood that he could deal with Khrushchev. And both Khrushchev and him understood that if they leave their generals aside who are willing to go to war, then that would be possible to do a lot more. And that is their, the letters are out now in the in National Security Archive from the George Washington University. You can read them and you see how they get together. And the point is when Khrushchev got to know that Kennedy was killed, allegedly from what his son and his wife told, his son later lived in the United States, he went to his niece and cried. Because and said everything is everything will turn to worse now. It's over, because they were on the brink of ending the Cold War. Kennedy and Khrushchev together understood that they could do it, and I think this is the one of the main reasons why he was considered soft on communism and not up to the task of running the United States in this eternal battle, as you described it. And that is the weird part. Eternal means it goes on and on. That's the same with Herrhausen. Herrhausen wanted to get the Soviet Union under Gorbachev, whom he admired and was a fan of, and he was good-willed. I think there's no way to misunderstand Gorbachev as being an evil with evil plans, but he was depicted as that. It is going on and on that if you talk to Russians and there is a possibility of diplomacy, then the people have to be taken out. This is what my book is about. All these people have been taken out.
It's the common theme, isn't it? All of them. And I mean, that's, but I think that just to go back to wrapping, Lee Harvey Oswald as a Soviet agent, I think there are two possibilities. I mean, he was not a Soviet agent. He was a wannabe CIA agent, but painting him as a Soviet agent was partly a means to stop investigation into the truth about Lee Harvey Oswald, because I think they calculated that there's going to be a fear that there would be World War III if you did that way. So it was like a disguise for the plotters to surround him with that. That's one possibility. The second possibility is that there were people who really wanted World War III, and they wanted this assassination of a Western leader to spark World War III and then lead the breadcrumbs to the Soviet Union. So and elite LBJ and people, as you said, they went to the Warren Commission and said, I think it was, he seems to have communist roots. We don't want World War III. And I think they some people in the Warren Commission even realized that even if he was not a Soviet agent, they realized at the back of their minds that the CIA might have something to do with it. And they were breadcrumbing the trail back to the Soviet Union. And before you got to the truth about that, that there was really the CIA, and anyway, that if even if you said it was the CIA, public opinion would push towards war with the Soviet Union. And I just worry, what I've been talking about on my show quite a lot is the possibility of the assassination of a big Western leader in the same way that Kennedy was assassinated. And that'll be a casus belli for a war with Russia, because no one in Europe wants to fight Russia. But if you have one big event like that, we'll all be shocked into something. And so that's why it's so important to know about the Kennedy assassination. And ditto, I mean, I was World War One, which is a top favorite topic of mine.
We have to get to another round of ads. And as I said, it will be very dense, but let's get back to that, because that is why I think it's important to talk about, and you think the same as I understand, because it's rehearsing. It's like a rehearsal what we have all the time. So this crime, which never has been solved, it never has been taken into account, like Watergate, which we also have to talk about, but that, because that's connected again, that is a similar scheme. But let's get to that after the ads.
Okay, everything connects.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts, reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
I'm Sandra, this is Jorge, and we were adopted in 2019. I remember when they first came to us, Michael was already a teenager. The whole cliche of, they're so lucky to have you guys, and it's the other way around. They have changed our family for the better. They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Dirk Pullman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Yeah, and back with Pelle. So we were at this point, and I will lead to that. Another thing that has to be understood is that John F. Kennedy wanted to end the Vietnam War, and he was looking for a second term to do that because he understood how dangerous that was. And that is another proof for the, let's say, the LeMay, James Jesus Angleton, these kind of people, that he was not up to the task of being American president. And that was really turned around after 2 days after his funeral. Two things which were strategically important were changed. First, it was all in for Vietnam with LBJ. And the Kennedy, who tried to stop the Israelis becoming a nuclear bomb power, that was also 180 degrees turned around. So LBJ was in favor of that. But there is another strange incident, which I know that Pelle is after, and that is Richard Nixon, because we were talking about Watergate. Watergate, in a way, was getting to the deep story of how the government was doing crimes, but it was investigated, and it changed for some time the situation in the United States, also in terms of the public, which had deep trust into the government during the Kennedy years or before. 70% thought that the government is doing the right thing. That went down to 30% afterwards in the Vietnam time, and now it's, I mean, it's detrimental. It is devastated, the confidence of the public and the media. The politics and the media, the public doesn't neither trust the media nor the politics. But there's a twist in this story, which is Watergate is not the shiny thing on the hill that shows how great that democracy is, because it's also kind of a plot, or at least there's good reason to see it as kind of a plot against Nixon, who started to behave not the exact goodly way that the American military and the military industrial complex, which Eisenhower warned of, by the way, was behaving. But Pelle, that's your specialty. So
well,
tell us
that. I wrote a book about Kennedy a few years ago, and I thought, well, Watergate was always an event that made me want to become a journalist. You know, as I say, I went to journalism school and remember reading and watching All the President's Men, and I wanted to work for the Washington Post, forget the Times or whatever. And I talked to Jefferson Morley about Watergate last week, and he said he actually work for the Washington Post, and it's actually one of the worst papers
Morley
in the world.
Morley is a specialist on Kennedy, to explain that.
That's right, yeah. And he just wrote a biography of where he linked Watergate to Kennedy. He doesn't do it in the way that I would do it, but he's done a very good book about it. It's called, Google him, it's called The Scorpion's Dance, and that was reference to Richard Helms and Nixon, because Richard Helms, I think, was involved as well. I think he was a deputy for the CIA, but he was head of the CIA by the late 60s. And what sank Nixon was that he and Kennedy were rivals. They're almost the same age, and they were both young men when they fought each other in the election of 1960, which was stolen by Kennedy's father, I think, partly on behalf of young Kennedy. So Nixon was, Kennedy was an aristocrat, and Nixon came from he was a grocer's family, and he always resented the East Coast elite, just like Trump plays on that a lot, you know. So he won the deplorables and the people in flyover country. And then he was quite socially conservative, petit bourgeois, if you like. But his main thing was that after 1960, when he was a hawk and plotted the assassination of Cuba, he wanted of Castro. He was part of that. And he said, I'll have to kill America's enemies if I have to. He seemed to have undergone some kind of conversion by 1967. He said, we've got to make peace with China. We can't isolate them. So he was crucial in this detente that happened. So we have Kennedy wanted to end the Cold War. Well, so did Nixon, his arch enemy. So although we associate, for instance, Nick Kissinger, I mean, he's a devil for a lot of progressives, and maybe he was, but on the particular issue of avoiding nuclear war, both he and Kissinger was the national security advisor for Nixon. Both realized that you've got to make friends with both Russia, Soviet Union, and China. So Kissinger was flying to Moscow and Beijing all the time. And the military, the CIA, didn't know what he was doing. He had this strange foreign accent, you know, gravelly, hello, hello, hello. And people thought, well, is he a Russian spy? Was he recruited by the Russians in 1945, you know, in Central Europe and so on? So both the Pentagon spied, they sent his assistant was a guy who went through his burn bags every night to extract stuff about him. And then the CIA put the plumbers into the White House, which is this group of agents that were going to conduct dirty tricks and try and plug the leaks.
E. Howard Hunt, whom you mentioned, connected there. He was doing that burglary. He was involved.
And Howard Hunt, this same guy who was in it. So it actually links in a very obvious way. But many people in the assassination community don't want to go as far as I do. But to me, it's you can make a good case about it. I mean, I hate just stating things. I'm a really evidence-based man. But I mean, some of the best writers on Kennedy think that Hunt was intimately involved in the Kennedy assassination. And it's completely proven and uncontroversial that Hunt was one of the main guys in the burglars of the. So, I mean, you know, you can link the two. And the question is, why did. The thing that sank Nixon was his detente policies. The CIA were very worried about it, the Pentagon were worried about it. And his secrecy, he didn't trust the CIA, and he was doing foreign policy privately. The other thing I think that sank Nixon was his obsessive interest in what had happened to John F. Kennedy. And you can listen on the Nixon tapes where he's kind of taunts almost Richard Helms, who was a younger kind of deputy back in the early 60s, about, who killed John? Did LBJ kill John? Did Nixon kill John? So he was really interested in that. And he was trying to get all the information out of the CIA that he could. They had a lot on each other, Helms and Nixon. And the thing about Hunt is, I think Nixon knew that Hunt was involved, and I think he brought Hunt into the White House to threaten Helms with this possibility that Hunt might change his allegiance from Helms into the White House, into Nixon, because Nixon and Hunt were both right wingers. Because I always thought, why invite the assassin of your predecessor into the White House as part of your secret agency, the plumbers? Well, I've often thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe I'm speculating, but maybe it's because he was hoping that Hunt would say, yeah, well, we were part of the team that killed Kennedy. And the fact that Helms, and that's why he's called it the Scorpion's Dance. There were scorpions dancing around each other. And Helms was very worried that Nixon would spill the CIA secrets. And Nixon was playing this game where that possibility was always overhanging their relationship, I think. And the whole break-in was, I don't know, it's just complicated. But I think there was something to do with, CIA were conducting a surveillance operation of the Democratic National Headquarters that involved them listening in on the sex talk between, because there was a prostitutes, there was a Columbia Plaza apartments one block away, where a lot of prostitutes, there's a sex ring going on. And the Democrats, this was the DNC, Democrats visiting from other parts of America would dial in from the phone that was eventually bugged by Howard Hunt and plan assignations. What happened was, I think that the CIA used the plumbers. They infiltrated the plumbers because a lot of them came from the CIA or former CIA, and steered Nixon's mission away into getting dirt on the Democrats. And they also controlled a camera inside the Columbia Plaza apartments. And that camera was run by a guy who worked for James McCord, who was the break-in guy, former CIA security man who headed, along with Hunt, the plumbers. So I think that they steered away. Nixon gave loose orders of what he wanted. And then this was totally twisted and interpreted by the CIA in a different way. And Jefferson Morley disagrees with me about this, but I think that they didn't get enough sex take from the Democrats so they could blackmail the Democrats. But what they did was, the break-in was so amateurish, like they retaped, because, you know, builders tape the doors when they want to have access to it. And James McCord, who was this former break-in man, security chief for the CIA, now part of the plumbers, he taped the locks, and then some security guards from the Watergate complex walked past and they untaped it because they thought it was just some builders who've left it overnight. McCord went out and retaped that damn thing so that the next time the guard came around and said, well, obviously there's somebody doing a break-in here. So, and there are a lot of anomalies, like McCord was...
Well, I think
we're
getting too much in detail now,
sorry,
because the big line is...
Sorry, so, yeah, so the point is Nixon was targeted by the CIA. Yeah,
Nixon is, again, he's dealing with China, and they, Kissinger, yeah, is realpolitik. That is the definition. It could be in a encyclopedia. When you say realpolitik, it could show Kissinger.
Yeah.
I think in a way,
yeah.
I think he, I don't agree with this moral view on him, because the good thing about real politicians is that you can always do negotiations. They are the ones that can negotiate.
Yeah.
This is what happened between USA and China. I also wanted to mention one thing, because there's a good source for this case of conspiracy theory. Mm. This was what the CIA called it, because if it's not one person who did it, then it's a conspiracy legally in the United States. And this is how the term conspiracy came to fruition. And that was Charles de Gaulle. That is from a book from his media manager, Pere Fitt, where he interviewed Charles de Gaulle. And David Talbot, an excellent source, I think, on the Kennedy case, translated that. That can be, you can find it on the internet if you look for Kennedy and Charles de Gaulle. De Gaulle said to Pere Fitt that, and that is the same guys who tried to kill him when he left Algeria. That was the point with when de Gaulle gave Algeria independence, because he said he couldn't handle the situation any longer. It was getting over with it. And then the generals, French generals, tried to kill him. Even two were sentenced to death that was not executed. But there was several coup attempts against him. You can see them in the movie The Jackal. That's the original one, is this story. And de Gaulle said in this book, which has never been translated into English and also not to any other language than French, it was written in French. He said that the same people, this is de Gaulle now, who tried to kill me, tried to kill Kennedy. And that is in person. DeSantis is one, Sater is a guy, a killer from Organisation Armée Secrète, the guys who tried to kill de Gaulle. And he describes the whole case with a patsy, with Lee Harvey Oswald. He calls him the communist that was a communist and was not a communist and was a communist. Mm-hmm. They created the situation where they could get the other. He understood it completely. He said they brought a situation where they could rule the case by saying, you don't want a civil war, do you? Or you don't want World War III, do you? So read that. Mm. So this idea that I described was shared by Charles de Gaulle. And that is something that has not been reported in the United States in the way that it should have been reported, because there again is a connection. There were at least three good murder attempts on Charles de Gaulle by these people. And that was also in connection, yet the in a way, if you look, because it was always about the Northern African oil, which was interesting. I don't get into that because we don't have much time left. But you mentioned, and I think this is what we have right now. There's even the case if somebody is considered to be soft on the Russians now, like Trump, he gets into a similar situation. We have about 4 minutes left, and they're yours then, Pelle.
Well, I didn't, in the work I've done so far, I haven't looked so much at Trump, because then I'm going to put myself hostage to developments, right? So it's better to look at history and just have a very short chapter on Trump at the end. But I think that the deep state have just changed methods. I mean, I think what I recognize in the takedown of Trump, I mean, the deep state don't assassinate people anymore. Maybe they do, but they prefer lawfare. So they become more house trained and they don't do such bad things. They prefer to remove people from political office rather than kill them. And so Kennedy, they killed, but they removed Nixon from a political office.
They optimize cancel culture. They, if you're an adversary, you're run down. Meanwhile,
my feeling about Trump is that just the feeling of reading about Watergate, the real Watergate, and this use of sort of catching people in when you're trying to prevent an investigation and it's called obstruction of justice, okay? And they're trying to catch Trump in a lot of obstruction of justice cases, and Flynn, who's his subordinate. And you can't obstruct justice if there's no underlying crime. So Trump is basically, it's like a real gaslighting. Trump is innocent of something. They accuse him of something. And he says, well, no, I'm innocent. Oh, that's obstruction of justice. I mean, that's a really simple way of telling it. But I mean,
what about RFK Jr. then? Because you have a weird situation. There are two people that they are considered by what we could call the military and Mickey Matt, like Ray McGovern called it or whatever. So both of them are from different sides. It's not that I'm a terrible Trump fan, but I can see that there is a strong movement against him because he's not part of the establishment. He's not part of the circles that are used to run the country. And RFK, that is very weird, is on a similar sense. So they said he wouldn't get protection by Secret Service.
It's hard to say who RFK works for, because I mean, on the one hand, there are people who say he's going to draw off enough votes from Trump to make him not win over Biden. So some people are saying he's controlled opposition. I don't know, you know. But of course, RFK says openly that JFK was killed by the CIA. And Trump has said it. I mean, Nixon showed it was a toxic subject to talk about that the CIA killed Trump. And that was one of the things that Helms made his political assassination of Nixon a priority, in my view. I think Trump, when he started talking about that, when Tucker Carlson, who is like Trump's agent in the media, if you like, as soon as he started talking about JFK being killed by the CIA, he was sacked by Fox News. And he's the most popular show that Fox News ever had. I think he's the most popular news host in America almost immediately. So I think that JFK is an incredibly toxic subject. And what worries me is if someone assassinates Trump, if he becomes president.
20 seconds left. Sorry, Pelle, for that. We should go on with that. Because, I mean, it's a lot of ground to cover, but you see, it's worthwhile. Yeah. So we carry on another week in that and get you the backstory. Thank you very much and bye.